and welcome back to the Layover Podcast. The off season is over. We're so back.
Well, it's not.
Does this count as the off season ending?
This is part of the off season.
No, this is the kickoff to season 13. This is the first season 13 related thing we're doing, except for the trailer, I guess.
It's the preseason.
It's preseason.
It's preseason.
I like to think of it as the finale of the off season.
No, I would say the off season's over and now we're in the preseason, and I think that these are different.
Okay. Well, congratulations to us.
Okay, but like the NHL 2024 preseason is part of the 2024-2025 season.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like in sports, the preseason, this is like spring training, right, in baseball. It's like it's not the off season anymore, but the season hasn't started yet.
Right. It's the kickoff to the season. So we're in agreement. And I'm sure that all the sports analogies will land very well with our audience. Anyways, we're talking game design. This is season 13, as you probably know by now if you've seen the trailers and the teasers and stuff like that, is a novel game design, which these days is increasingly rare as, you know, we do more repeats of hide and seek and tag and stuff like that. But this time around, we designed a brand new season for the depths of the European winter and for Mr. Tom Scott. And today we're going to talk about the rules and how it works and why we made the decisions we did.
Yeah.
And why all the decisions we made were perfect and correct.
As they always are.
Yeah, famously, we have no flaws. So despite what we just said about having no flaws and always making the correct decisions, we started with a relatively different concept for the season than we ended up with, as is often the case.
As is often the case.
Mostly because, I mean, I think we kind of started with the title, which is often the right way of doing things on YouTube/Nebula. And the title that we really liked was Race to Visit Every
EU.
European Country.
Yeah, yeah. Every country in Europe. It was going to be every country in the EU.
Oh, yeah. Every EU country or something like that. Because we did some mathematics and realized that we probably could in 5 days.
6 days. I think we had decided on
six. Oh, maybe, yeah, six.
It would have had to be six, yeah.
Well, if you were speed running it, you could have done it in under 5 days. But in order to turn it into a game, you need like 5 or 6 days. We'll talk about it in a second. But yeah, basically, like, if you have two teams basically racing to claim unclaimed countries, you can in, I think our math was around 4 12-hour days with zero stopping for like challenges or anything. It would normally take around 4 12-hour days for two teams to visit every single EU country between them.
Yeah.
I think about that. I think it was a little faster than that. But yeah, I think roughly.
I think if you had like perfectly optimized routes, if both teams had perfectly optimized routes, you could do it a little faster. But yeah.
Yeah.
It was something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that this would be cool.
And it would have been.
Because then you would go to all of the countries in Europe. And that's neat. And there's some weird ones like, you know,
France,
Cyprus, and France, of course.
But yeah, I mean, we definitely all liked the idea of like a completion factor.
A completion like, factor.
With right. zero exception, visiting the entirety of the EU.
Yeah, and so in this game, it would just be like the game ends when the last one gets visited, right? And that's the end of the game.
And we had even talked about a sort of semi-collaborative system. Because like if we were going to promise every country, we like needed factors to reinforce that happening. And so we had talked about like, well, maybe like there's a collaborative thing where if both teams don't get to all of the countries by the end, that like they both lose or something like that, which would have been kind of new and interesting, but maybe weird.
Mm-hmm.
I love a game when everyone can lose.
Do we want to talk about sort of why this actually doesn't work, though?
Well, it could have worked. It might have just been boring, but yes.
I mean, it could have worked. It could have been functional, yeah, but it would be a worse game than what we're doing.
And I think in the grand scheme of concepts that we've scrapped, this one was one of, if not the closest to seeing the light of day.
That's true. I'd agree with that.
Yeah, we pivoted rather late in the process.
Yeah.
Late enough that, like, we originally told Tom that this was going to be the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But really, I think where we realized we had to pivot was when we got deeper into simulations.
Yes. Well, I mean, here's the fundamental problem here, is that if you want to get to all of them in the amount of time that we are going to have to film this and that we can have Tom be filming this, we really can't go past 6 filming days. That's really the limit. And so 6 filming days, if you're going to make this work, then you have to make a lot of compromises. The compromises are as follows. 1, you can't just do the whole thing on public transit. You have to have rental cars involved. And actually, a decent chunk of this game is going to be on rental cars. It would have to be, right? Like, yeah, it's unavoidable.
And we're anti-car.
I think we're broadly anti-car, but I think the biggest thing about why we don't like rental cars in general, not that they don't have any purpose, but the broad reason that we don't like them is that they are a worse engine for drama, because trains have schedules that you could miss, right? You could miss the train that you need. It could be the case that the train that you need leaves at a certain time, giving you a ticking clock that you've got to deal with. It could be the case that your train is delayed or canceled, leading to like interesting stress and obstacles to overcome, right? Like, you are running to go get on the train right before it leaves, right? You barely miss it. You just make it. It's just the schedule that trains have, we have learned, I think, over time, great engine for drama. Rental cars just don't have this. The rental car will just be there. Whatever you need to do takes as long as it takes for you to do it. And then you just get in your rental car and you keep going. And so it loses a significant option for drama, a natural creator of drama, which I think is not good.
Yeah. And the other problem is that, like, while we could have gone to all of those countries, both teams, and we could have competed for all of the countries, it would have been tight enough that both teams would have had to plan out most of their route pretty early on and know exactly what all the right moves are. And our concern was that it would start to just feel like you're just going through the motions. And like, one of the things that we look for most in a game is like that it's dynamic, that like you can't plan 2 days ahead because circumstances in the game are going to change and then you've got to change your plans. Like, that is what makes it interesting and exciting.
Yeah.
And so if we had a game where you basically had to know what you were doing on day 4 on day 1, there's really nothing to even talk about. And it would have gotten rather boring. And it would have gotten to the point where, like, if, for example, both teams started the game by going to France, then, like, we're already screwed. We're already moving too slowly because, you know, they're competing for the same country. And we wanted the possibility for things like that to happen. And that wouldn't have really been able to happen in this version.
Yeah, I think that like we had a version of the game where it was all the countries, but there was still a steel system. But the truth was, like, I don't know if that was even going to work. Like, I think that the most workable version of the game was that there wasn't a steel system, or that, you know, to get to all of them, there either had to not be a steel system or the steel system had to be much less likely to be used than we ended up calibrating the game for.
Yeah, it sort of just had to be like a path optimization game, which is not the kind of game that I think is either that fun to play or especially translates well into video. I mean, we've had path optimization games. We've had forms of this. I mean, every game has some level of path optimization. Like, the biggest forms of this would have been Arctic Escape and Circumnavigation. But each of those had quite a few mechanisms to basically nerf the extent to which it was a path optimization game. More so in Arctic Escape than Circumnavigation, because we learned. But, like, you know, what we saw in, like, Circumnavigation is that at the end of the day, it was pretty much just, like, who from the get-go had the best idea of their path, mixed with a little bit of, like, challenge execution and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Certainly, that was more influential on our side. But those elements of it we saw didn't really translate that well to video. So I guess one other thing that we haven't fully mentioned is, like, we sort of mentioned this, but, like, the means of travel had to have been the most efficient means of travel, which would mean a lot of planes and a lot of cars. And particularly the plane side.
You have to do a lot of plane hopping, just like boop, 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 boop.
Yeah. And that does not necessarily translate to, like, particularly we felt like eventually we felt like in Europe, where there is such good public transit, it's a bit of like a waste of a Europe season to, you know, we can do a plane season anywhere. We can't do a train season anywhere. So it's kind of a shame to go to Europe and not take advantage of train networks, at least in part.
Yeah, I feel like we've just learned, like, over time, like, it's not that planes can't work or be good for games, but that, like, just the amount of time and investment required to take a plane is just so high. Like, the getting to the airport, the security, the buying the ticket a certain amount of time in advance, getting on the plane, and you're on the plane. You can't really talk while you're on the plane. Like, you can't really film well when you're on a plane, getting off the plane, getting out of it. It's so much. It's such a chunk of time that, like, it's just worse.
Yeah.
On average, I think, for content than a train ride is.
And I think airports are a lot less interesting than train stations.
Right.
I think particularly European airports have a tendency to be, like, very similar inside, where they look pretty generic compared to each other. And there's not a whole lot of variety in, like, what they have, at least compared to, like, American airports. There's a reason for this, by the way. It's because European airports are overwhelmingly private and capitalism ruins everything.
Well, I was going to say, too, I think the biggest difference as well is, like, when you're in an airport, you're in this giant indoor complex. When you're at a train station, it's like there's part of it that's indoor. But generally, like, when we go to a train station, you get to see the city at least a little bit. Either it's open and you get to see the city.
Unless you're at Long Beach Airport. You've been to Long Beach?
I don't think I have been to Long Beach. But you know what I mean, right? It's like, I feel like you typically will walk out of the train station. You get to see the city when we, like, pull the challenge or whatever.
Yeah.
Or you can often see it just from the train. Long Beach Airport. Oh, that looks nice.
It's delightful.
Ooh.
It's lovely. All outdoors.
Mm.
Yeah. It used to be a big JetBlue hub, but then JetBlue stopped making money, so they stopped flying there that much. Mm. But it was lovely. And I'm also a huge fan of Hawaiian airports because they're all indoor, outdoor.
Oh, I remember that. In Hawaii. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, so yeah, eventually we kind of got on a call and we grappled with reality and we're like, okay, we should probably pivot. Which, you know, in some ways I think we were bummed about because we really liked, as I said, the idea of, like, let's visit every single EU country. And we knew that, like, the audience would be into the idea, like, especially the audience from, like, some of the, I don't know, lesser visited European countries, I think would have been very excited to see us stop there. I mean, I'll spoil things minorly by saying we still were able to visit a lot of lesser visited European countries. Mm-hmm.
But I will also spoil something by saying we do not go to every country.
No, we don't.
What? Oh. Yes, that's true. Anyways, so, but the opportunity we thought we had was basically that we can make a much more dynamic game. We can incentivize the types of transport that we know work best. And I don't think there was a third thing. I structure that as if there was a third.
No, I think there's a big time third thing, which I would argue is maybe the most important. We can allow there to be more direct conflict between teams and stealing between teams.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of include that in the dynamic bucket in my mind, but sure.
Okay. No, fair enough.
You make a good point. So I guess let's talk first about the claiming mechanism, because I think that's probably the most fundamental aspect, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'll say that, like, the claiming mechanism that we use, we first developed when we thought it was going to be all countries. And then I think we just liked it so much that we kept it, even though, you know,
yeah,
it was slightly less necessary once we switched.
Yeah. Well, TBH, I don't think this exact system would have ever really worked with all the ones.
No, it wouldn't.
In retrospect?
No.
Well, I think that the challenges were going to have to be way easier. Right.
Challenges were way easier, but just, like, the level of competition over countries that, minor spoiler, we ended up seeing.
Yeah.
We would never have visited all 27 EU countries.
Yeah.
Is it 27? Something like that.
27.
29.
No. Schengen is 29.
Schengen's 29.
EU is 27. Oh, because that's the other thing. It's the Schengen zone. We switched from EU to Schengen.
Yes. So game board, Schengen countries, including countries that are not technically part of the Schengen area, but are open to the Schengen area, like open borders to the Schengen area, which I believe includes Andorra, Monaco, San Marino, and Vatican City.
Yep, that is correct. Very good.
And importantly, it's worth noting that this Schengen area is not exactly the same thing as the EU, but it's very similar to the EU. The major differences are that the Schengen area includes Switzerland and it includes Norway.
And it does not include Ireland.
And it does not include Ireland. Yeah. But like the fact that it included Switzerland and Norway were like, I think, pretty big factors in our minds of switching, because we were like, those two countries are cool.
They are cool.
Yeah.
We feel bad about Ireland. Apparently, Amy had had Brian record a video for the Ireland challenge.
Oh, I'm sorry, Brian.
No.
Or I think he hadn't recorded it yet, but had asked him to. And like Brian, I got a text from Brian that was a screenshot of a conversation he had with Amy, where it was like, hey, do you still want me to record that video? And Amy was like, those crazy cats cut Ireland out of the game.
Yeah.
Brutal.
And he was like, wait, what did he say? I'll find it.
Completely arbitrarily, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. For no reason. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Brian asked, have you got the script? And Amy said, hi, I fear these crazy cats have cut Ireland from the game. And Brian said, Protestant bastards.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
It sounds about right.
Yeah. Anyways, but yeah, I mean, we thought Norway, Switzerland, and also the microstates, all interesting. So we kind of wanted to include those. And we also knew that, like, in this game, realistically, it's never going to make sense strategically for you to fly all out of your way to Ireland, go through passport control to enter the country and stuff like that.
The truth was that in every simulation that we did, nobody got out of the airport in Ireland. You just landed there and then you got on another plane and went somewhere else, which is pretty lame.
Yeah. And I think the only reason you ever really would have is if you had a good, like, there were a lot of Ryanair flights.
It was Ryanair's hub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ryanair flights where you kind of make your own connection between two other weird places, which I've actually done. I once flew from France to Hungary via Ireland because I got two really cheap Ryanair flights, which if you look at a map is not the direct route, but it worked out. And it gave me like 3 hours in Dublin. And that is the only time I've ever visited Ireland. And I am now an Irish citizen. Wow. I will go back though. Anyway, so Schengen area, map, claiming mechanism. Let's get back to that.
Oh yeah.
So it's pretty simple.
It's shockingly simple.
You claim a country by going to it.
And, like, we did this because, like, despite the fact that we weren't going to commit to every country, we still wanted, like, a claiming system that was fast-paced. Because, like, we still wanted to encourage people to go to as many countries as we could get to.
Yeah.
And that's pretty fast.
Yeah. If you're wondering and you're about to type an annoying comment, embassies do not count.
Embassies don't count, but enclaves do. Enclaves and exclaves do count.
Yep.
But, yeah. I was quite pleased with how elegant the system was of claiming and locking. I thought that it's very simple, but it led to, I think, a lot of very interesting strategy.
Yeah. Well, we haven't mentioned locking yet.
Oh, we haven't even mentioned locking. Yeah.
Yeah.
So claiming, yeah, couldn't be simpler. Sorry, we should be clear. You have to be on the ground in a country. If you fly through that airspace, then that does not count, of course.
But taking a train through does, or taking a bus through.
Taking a train through does.
Yeah.
Your foot does not even have to touch the soil if you're just on a bus or something. The vehicle you're in has to touch the ground.
Yeah. And while flying over does not count, if the plane lands and you get out of the plane, that does count as long as, important rules thing.
You don't even have to get out of the plane, technically. Technically.
Well,
it's claimed the minute the plane lands.
Yes, technically you don't get out of the plane. But in practice, you would always have to get out of the plane.
Well, in practice, you have to.
But because the only circumstances where you wouldn't is if you're booked on a connection and you're in one of those weird circumstances where they treat it like a bus, like on Southwest. But yeah, if you are booked on a connection, like a connecting flight, it's the same rules actually as
Australia,
where a connection is treated as if it's kind of one continuous flight. So that basically you do not claim the country while you're on the ground during the connection. The reason why is because there's basically too many spammy scenarios that you can create by doing that. And also, as we'll get to in a second, the cost of flights, we wanted that to be a constraint. So getting connecting flights sort of like makes it too hard for us to accurately restrict flights in the manner in which we wanted, because you can get really cheap multiple country hops by having a connection.
And you never leave the airport.
Yeah, we also wanted people to miss potential connections that they were maybe trying to make. Because I guess another thing that we haven't mentioned yet is we also have the rule that we've had in the past, like in Australia, where you can only book a flight once you're off the previous flight.
Yep. Yeah, you can only hold one plane ticket at a time. Because again, engine for drama. If you book your flights all in advance, that's lame. If you, as we saw in Australia, have to run through the airport and beg a gate agent to book you on a flight, that is more interesting.
Yeah. So getting back once again to the locking mechanism.
Oh, for sure.
So the way you lock is by completing a challenge specific to every country. And the challenges are designed where there is a high possibility of failure.
Yes.
High, but by high, we mean about 30, 35%. Yeah.
30 to 40%. Yeah.
High relative to average jet lag challenges. Yeah.
Certainly. Yes, yes, yes.
But not greater likelihood of failure than success.
And we don't know what the challenges are for the first time ever.
This is true.
We had an AI make the challenges,
no.
Right? We're very pro AI.
No, we did not have an AI. We had an Amy.
Oh, I confused the letters.
Yeah. So yeah, so Amy was the key challenge writer this season. So each country has a specific challenge associated with it. It's not a random draw or anything. We travel with a set of 33 little envelopes, one for each country. And when you get to, for example, France, you open the French challenge, and then you got one shot to complete it. Each challenge, you can only attempt once.
Indeed.
And so if you get it, if you succeed at the challenge, you lock the country. It cannot be messed with. It is yours. But
basically, so if you fail to complete the country's challenge, or if you just decide, oh, I'm just going to leave the country without trying the challenge because I'm in such a hurry, then the country is vulnerable to being stolen by the other team. And so if the other team goes to that country and they successfully complete the challenge that you either failed or skipped, then they steal control of it. And then it is locked for them and it's theirs. And so that is the stealing mechanism for this game.
And the key thing here, which is implied by what Ben said, but just to be explicit about it, you have to successfully complete the challenge to steal ownership of the country. Like if Ben goes to France and does not lock France, right? And then Sam goes to France and tries to steal France. If Sam fails, Ben still controls France. Like if you are the second team to arrive in a country, arriving there does nothing, right? Other than allows you to try the challenge, right? But it's the first team in, it defaults to you, basically, if you were the first team there, right? The only way to steal is by successfully completing the challenge.
Yep.
Yeah. So maybe just to somewhat reiterate, there's basically, I think, three scenarios for countries. There might be more than three. One, a team goes through, they claim it, they don't lock it, the other team never comes, and it's theirs until the end. Two, the first team comes through, claims it, doesn't lock it, the other team comes in, they attempt the challenge, they succeed, then the country goes to the second team. There's also the scenario where first team claims it, doesn't lock it, next team comes through, attempts the challenge, succeeds, then it's the second team's. And I guess the fourth scenario, I was wrong as I thought, the fourth scenario is first team goes through, no, there's five scenarios, goes through, attempts the challenge, succeeds, it's there, it's the end of the game. Fifth scenario, they go through, claim it, attempt the challenge, fail, other team comes, attempts the challenge. No, there's six scenarios.
Fails, right?
Fails.
Are you not saying the same scenarios?
I feel like you've looped back.
I think you've said the same scenario like twice.
I'm pretty confident that describing it in terms of six scenarios is the most confusing possible way to walk through it.
Well, when I started, I didn't realize it was six. I thought it was simpler.
Ultimately, it's a very simple system. We are intimidating the audience. They understand how it works.
It's ultimately very simple.
Well, it's simple at its core, complex in execution, which all the best games are. But yeah, basically that's to say, like, if you think about the strategic scenarios, there is...
I think there are only three scenarios. Scenario one...
This does not matter.
Scenario one, a team goes to a country, succeeds at the challenge, the country is locked and nothing can be done. Scenario two, a team goes to a country, they either do not attempt the challenge or they fail the challenge.
Those are two scenarios. You're moving the goalpost.
Okay, well then there's four total. The other team goes to the country and succeeds, country stolen. Third scenario, first team goes to a country, either fails or does not attempt the challenge. Second team goes, fails the challenge. Team one retains the country, right? Those are the scenarios.
I feel like that was more than four.
Okay, we gotta stop describing scenarios.
I think you're just trying to prove me wrong. This is not interesting. But yeah, so if you look at this on paper, it appears to give an advantage to the team going first.
Going to the country first.
Essentially, visiting a country first.
Yeah.
If you just look at this challenge system, the reason I'm wording it this way is that there are... other strategic scenarios that the, I think, overall version of the game unlock that can mess with that somewhat, which may be a little bit spoilery. But if you just look at the challenge system, it is more advantageous to be in a country first because you basically have, if it's a 50-50 shot of success or failure of the challenge, which is not exactly, but for the sake of argument, the first team gets that 50-50 shot. And if they fail... they still have the country.
Yeah. At that point, it's another 50-50 shot for the other team.
Yeah. But basically, if you can do math, which I can't, on average, the first team ends up with the country more often.
If we were to assume that it is a 50-50 shot that a team succeeds at a challenge, which it isn't, but if we assume that it is, then if you are first to a country, then you have a 75% chance of getting to keep the country, even if the other team comes and attempts to steal it. That is the math on that.
Maybe. I don't know. So that's the challenge system, I think?
The challenge system, yeah.
I'm trying to think if there are any other details. Oh, I mean, as we mentioned, maybe worth a little bit about the particularities of how we designed the challenges so that we didn't know about them, which is basically that, like, I mean, we and especially y'all helped a little bit with, like, very loose templates of the challenges.
Yeah, there are a few elements of it. So like one thing we did is like we sent Amy various things. We were like, here are some sort of templates of like types of challenges that we are thinking could be interesting. We were also sometimes like I went through and gathered like here are a bunch of interesting facts about countries that I think that maybe could inspire a challenge or something. But I mean, we do have to give credit to Amy that like a lot of the challenges are just her work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the majority of it was, yeah, her unique work. But the primary point at which we were involved was that we always do like a pretty rigorous challenge review system to like make sure that it's working the way that, I mean, we could never go into all the details of our philosophy of like what makes a good challenge and what doesn't. But we wanted to make sure that basically... we were on the same page about like challenge design and to the extent possible, like wording and stuff like that, making sure it's as specific as possible. So we basically had one big super redacted document that Amy went through and she removed any piece of information that could link a challenge to a location.
Yeah.
Even like by implying. So like anything that like implies that like the theme of the challenge or even if, like, it's one where you can only execute it in a certain country, the details that makes it executable or, yeah, anything that would link it to a country. And then we reviewed that, which we were able to review meaningfully for most challenges. Some were just, like, articles.
Yeah, it's true. There were, I would say, like, yeah, probably 80% of the challenges we did a meaningful review and, you know, made various adjustments and we were, like, this needs to be worded differently. This needs to be defined better. There were some where we were like, this is just like too hard and we needed to come up with something different or like, you know, whatever, adjust, adjust, adjust. There were about 20% of challenges where it was just like, trust me. It was just like Amy being like, you have to trust me on this one because I can't tell you anything about it without it being obvious what country it's for. So you just gotta let me cook here. Yeah.
And the reason why we wanted to have the anonymous challenge system is that basically we wanted us to be surprised. And the reason we wanted us to be surprised is we really did not want a dynamic, which, you know, we have honestly had a little bit in the past where the decisions of where we go
is linked to
are hinged on our unique knowledge of what the challenges will be.
Yes.
Because this is something that we had in like New Zealand and we didn't love, was that like our decisions of like we go this route versus that route were dramatically impacted by the fact that we knew on this route the challenges are this, on that other route the challenges are this. And the problem is that the audience does not know that.
Yeah,
right.
At least to the level that we do.
Yeah, we always like, and this is sort of an important tenet of making a show that is not necessarily a game design tenet, but like we want, to the best of our ability, the total knowledge of the players playing the game to be roughly equal to the audience. Like we don't want to be operating with information that the audience doesn't have or can't have, because otherwise it would require us like, again, rattling off, here are all 33 of the challenges. Like, we don't want to do that.
Right. Like, if anything, we want the audience to operate with more information than the players, right? That's dramatic irony. That's fun. Like, that's mm-hmm. that's why the audience gets to see both sides. And, you know, we only experience one side. And it's fun as an audience member to know more than the players. It's not fun for the players to be making these decisions that you don't understand why they're making them, because they know, again, in New Zealand, you would sometimes have to be like, well, there are three routes and one of them has these six challenges and the other one has these five and the other one has these four. And it's like, well, I can't explain 15 challenges right now and my opinion of how difficult they are. It's like, you just have to trust me. And then that's not interesting, because then you don't understand why I'm making the decision I'm making.
Yeah. Yeah. And the game definitely would have played out very differently if we had known what the challenges were. It ended up being a significant kind of gameplay influence.
For sure.
The lack of knowledge. So that's the pretty much challenge. Here's one thing that maybe only I will ever find interesting. So I, at the beginning of this season, Ben and Adam and Amy and I think one of their friends, or really one of Amy's friends, actually packed the envelopes.
No, this was our friend.
No.
This was our friend.
Our friend Just. Shout out to Just.
Do Amy and Just have beef? Doesn't qualify as Amy's friend?
No, I'm just saying he isn't only Amy's friend. I would say that Just is as much our friend as Amy's friend.
Okay. But he packed the envelopes. Why? I forget. Was Amy?
Because Amy was in New Zealand, I think, on vacation.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah.
And we couldn't see
them. Right. And then obviously you all couldn't pack the envelopes. So he packed them. And then I was just given the pack of envelopes at the start of the season. And again, this is probably only interesting to me. My envelopes were yellow. I only ever saw my envelopes. I did the whole season. And then I started reviewing footage. And y'all's envelopes were red. And it blew my fucking mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, they're the colors of the team.
Because in my mind, it was like the yellow envelopes. That's the color of the envelopes. Oh. And I never considered that y'all's envelopes could be a different color.
Mm.
You're the yellow team.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe.
Again, I said this was only going to be interesting to me. It was just like it blew my mind because the envelopes were a different color. But the envelopes, the yellow envelopes, that's the thing you do. You open the yellow envelopes, not the red envelopes. Anyways.
I do think it's worth giving credit because we did actually have to pack the envelopes twice. And the envelopes that were used in the game were packed, in fact, by my mother because Amy was gone again. But maybe it's worth getting into why we had to pack the envelopes twice. I don't know if we've mentioned this.
It's because the season was supposed to film on December 5th.
Yes. And then it did not.
And then it did not.
For reasons.
For reasons that we simply won't go into right now.
But then we ended up, I mean, what we can say is we were all in London.
Yeah.
We were about 24 hours away from starting.
We were ready to go.
And then we went all the way back to the US and we had a lovely Christmas. And then we all flew back to Europe and did take two. So first time that's happened, which kind of inevitable in the long run. We've even like joked in the past how lucky we've been about never having a delay to a season for anything. But yeah, I mean, luckily it didn't have too much of an impact on post-production timelines because of the holidays and the fact that most of the post-production team was going to be off for a lot of the period in between those two filming windows. But on take two, credit to Ben's mom. No credit to Just.
Sorry, Just.
So what else is there to discuss?
I mean, the truth is that the design is pretty straightforward this season.
Yeah, pretty simple design, complex execution, which I do love.
Yeah, it's certainly what the goal was.
Start location.
Oh, yeah, we should talk about that.
Start location. We went back and forth a lot.
Certainly did. Certainly did.
Because start location is very important to gameplay.
It is. It's very important. And I would say the two places that we really considered were... Well, there were really three things we considered. We considered London, we considered Switzerland, and we considered a weird random country that we wouldn't normally go to.
I mean, we really liked the idea of Switzerland because it's the neutral country.
Right, it's
right?
Fun.
It's like famously neutral country. And we especially liked it when we were doing EU. Because in that case, it's not EU.
Right.
So it's not an EU country, but it's in the center of all the EU countries.
Right.
So it's like, this is perfect. But when we switched to the current configuration of the game, where it was no longer EU, it was Schengen, we still liked it. But then we thought that there was something a little bit weird about starting in a claimable country. Because then you have to create some sort of
rules exception.
Unique rule yeah. set for who claims the first country or do like a head-to-head challenge in a unique way.
Or you say like, well, Switzerland isn't eligible because it's the starting place, but it's like, what? So it's the whole Schengen yeah. area minus Switzerland. That's kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately what it came down to was that we were having a hard time deciding because like we really liked Switzerland. We love Switzerland as a destination. I think we would love to film every season. And in some ways, Switzerland is like the very best place in the world to do jet lag.
I think that we should, you know, just do every season of jet lag in Switzerland because it's a wonderful
just do
country.
Switzerland the game.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not against it. It might get expensive, but it's just such a nice place to film and it's gorgeous. The trains are excellent. The vending machines have nice little snacks.
God, I love it.
And all
there.
That. But anyway, so ultimately what it came down to was just like, I was going to be in London for other reasons before we started. Tom was too. So we thought rather than have four of us all travel to start location, we can only have two of us travel to start location, Ben and Adam. And it's also easier for Ben and Adam to get to London from New York. You can even take the daytime flight, the anti-jet lag flight.
Yeah.
But yeah, what then became weird though is in take two, in our delayed take two, in that time, I was already going to be just over the border from Switzerland in like the French Alps.
Yeah.
I was meeting my Euro family for a New Year's ski trip in Chamonix. And at that time, I was trying to think of a good way to argue for, actually, things have changed. This time, we should totally start in Switzerland.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I couldn't quite construct the argument.
No.
So I flew back to London in that case. But yeah, I mean, the reason we would like London, I mean, kind of the inverse of Switzerland is just like, it's not Schengen. So we started in a non-playable area. And
it's got the Eurostar.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got good opening moves. Like, equally good opening moves, which is cool.
Yeah. Or it's got lots of flights. Lots of flights.
Yeah, I mean, we like that basically when you simulate it, it was like roughly equal incentive to like take a flight somewhere versus take a Eurostar to France or Belgium and then just start like claiming countries by land.
Yeah. And frankly, I think we liked the idea of it seemed likely that one team would take a train and one team would take a plane. And we were like, well, that's an interesting start as opposed to, you know, I think other starting places, that's less the case.
Yep. So I think that's, oh, maybe worth acknowledging, one of the points against the UK is that we felt bad for all the British people who've been begging us for years to do a UK season.
Yeah.
That we would, like, start in London and then be out of London in, like,
say bye.
Probably by minute five of runtime. Look, we feel bad. We want to do a UK season.
We will, eventually.
As any British person knows, there's a very narrow weather window when it can be pleasant to do a jet lag style thing in the UK. So that has often been an impediment. And also, as everyone likes to point out, the trains are very expensive and delayed. And also the Tories, here's my beef with the Tories.
Go, do it.
The Tories shut down all of the rural lines. You know, the best lines to play jet lag on are like those tiny little rural lines that take you to the middle of nowhere. The Tories were like, let's privatize the rails. Let's make them profitable, even though public transit is a social good, not a profit-making venture. So they shut down all of the interesting rail lines. So if you look at the dynamics of it, like in France and in continental Europe, you have still a lot of these like interesting rural lines that allow for like back roads and stuff like that. All those been killed in the UK. Not all of them. This is hyperbolic. But it is a genuine thing where the privatization and profit-focused nature of UK rails have led to a less interesting rail network for jet lag the game style games, which they really should have thought of.
I think we need to make all of our parks profitable.
Well, yeah, we need to charge admission fees.
Can we get our parks profitable? Can we get our highways profitable, please? I think that everything should be making a profit.
I agree. Sidewalks, too. What gives you the right to walk without generating revenue for the city?
I think it's bad.
Yeah. I mean, what motivation will they have to make the sidewalks good?
None.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Anyways, any other rules?
Let's see. Let me look at the dock here. Are we missing anything?
It's like no cars, but we already went over that.
$4,000 flight budget. There we go. That's one thing we missed.
Oh, yeah. We haven't mentioned that.
Originally, when we were going to try to get to all the countries, we were just going to be like, look, you spend what you spend on flights, and that's the deal. And then for this, we wanted to make it so that you could take flights with good frequency, you could get where you wanted to go, but that there were still limitations on where you went, that you would still have to be keeping budget in mind, and it would limit the number of flights you took, or more so, it would sort of limit your ability to take exactly the right flight you always wanted. And so we made a $4,000 flight budget.
But mostly in service of incentivizing land-based transport.
Yes.
Because we think that that is the most interesting transport to take from a gameplay and content perspective. So we just wanted to have game incentive to do the thing that leads to the best content.
Yep. No taxis?
No taxis.
Yep.
But any buses are all right. Long distance buses included. Anything else?
I think that's it.
No, it's a rather simple game. I think that this is probably our simplest game since season 2.
Yeah.
I would say it's simpler than season 2 even, maybe.
It might even be simpler than season 2.
No, probably.
And that was quite an accomplishment for us. I think that we are incredibly predisposed to overcomplicating games because we start designing them and then we get bored and we start adding more shit that we don't need to be adding, probably. So this was really an exercise in how elegant can we make a game?
I mean, in many ways, it's easier to design a complex game.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. But it's harder to, like, make all the incentives work with a simple game. Like, it's easier to make a complex game that works well, but then the fact that it's complex makes it less entertaining and less fun to play. Harder to make a simple game that works equally well, but then the end result is inherently better. In our hot take opinions, though. Any other rulesy things to mention? Oh, game period. So we start at 7:30 a.m. Central European time. We end at 5:30 p.m. Central European time. So pretty short game days, just based on sunlight.
10 hours, and it was because the dang sun is not up that much.
Yeah.
I remember when we told Tom what we were doing, he was like, you have picked the wrong time of year. And we were like, my dog, we know. Yes. Nothing we could do about it.
Yeah, the only thing we can do is advocate for more rail networks in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
Which, look, Australia, I would love it if you got on it.
I would love it if any freaking country got on it. Look, if Africa or South America could build some better rail networks so people will stop getting mad at us for not going there, that would be great for me.
Mm-hmm. So that's the season? As I think we've implied many times, I think we're quite happy with the level of drama and kind of interesting scenarios that unfolded from this relatively simple core.
Yeah.
I think we ended up with a pretty engaging narrative. I realize I'm slipping into like content buzzwords now.
Yeah. But there's a lot of synergy this season.
A lot of dynamism.
Relatability. There's a content buzzword. I actually wouldn't say that what we do is very relatable because what we do is kind of insane.
Not really, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, should we foreshadow the first layover of the season?
I'll foreshadow it. Sure.
I don't think foreshadowing is the right word in that case. Should we tease?
Tease, sure.
It's very exciting. Next Thursday, we will be in New York City, and this will be, I guess, the day after this podcast comes out. We'll be in New York City for the Jetlag Season 13 in-person premiere. Unfortunately, all the tickets are sold out. I will say, however, we are doing a standby line for any extra spaces. We usually aren't able to get that many people in, but check our probably blue skies these days for details on that if you are in New York and are happy with your Thursday evening being standing on a sidewalk in Manhattan and not getting into the venue, because that is a very possible scenario. But if you are happy with that scenario, check our blue skies for details. But yeah, so we'll be doing that, and we will be doing live layover.
It's true. Layover live.
Yep.
And that's what people are really coming for. They don't care about the episode.
You guys don't sound hyped enough.
They want to see the layover live.
And if you are coming to the event, but you don't want to see the layover live, now is your chance to get out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or think of really good questions related to specifically the episode. I'm going to yell this like 7 times when we do it. We want questions related to the episode, not just generic overall jet lag questions. And you will see the episode prior to doing it. But yeah, live layovers episode. We've done it once before. It was a lot of fun. Live audience, live questions. Confront us with questions about why we're doing dumb stuff live in the moment. And then, of course, we'll have normal rest of the season layovers. All right. What else do we need to tease? Oh, Abolish Everything is out. Watch Abolish Everything.
Abolish Everything is out. Yeah, Abolish Everything is out. Please watch it.
First episode is out, including Mr. Benjamin Doyle, who had a great set.
Thank you.
A wonderful performance by Mr. Ben Doyle.
Well, actually, technically it wasn't Mr. Benjamin Doyle. What was his name?
No, it was Benjamin Doyle.
His name was Ben Doyle.
It was Benjamin Doyle.
Oh, okay. But he's from like the 1870s.
Well, don't spoil it. They'll see.
Okay.
Go watch it.
Got it.
It's a fun episode.
It is a very good episode, yeah. And these will be coming out every 2 weeks after this. So I really enjoy it. I think it's very funny. I still managed to laugh watching it for like the 4th or 5th time in like export review.
Yeah, hasn't that been crazy? I feel like that's been for me too when I've reviewed it. Like I still am laughing at stuff.
Yeah, it's a good sign.
Well, sometimes I'm catching jokes on like the 3rd instance, which is maybe not very good reflection of me.
Sure.
But there were also like, I was realizing when watching through it, like I was watching back in the Video Village in kind of like a back room of the venue. And there were plenty of jokes that, like, just didn't make sense for me in the moment because I wasn't able to, like, see what they were doing close enough or, like, see their expressions close enough on the tiny monitors. And then watching it with big screen, now it's like, oh, I finally get it. But, yeah, very funny comedians, some of which in this first episode, beyond Ben Doyle, like, very possible that you recognize some of these performers. Who are the most likely to be?
Annie Rowarda. I think there's a decent shot that our listeners know depths of Wikipedia.
Yeah. Depths of Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Probably fewer SNL heads.
Yeah. Ben Marshall from
SNL.
Oh,
yeah. Well, Ben Marshall. Yeah. If you watch SNL, one of the Please Don't Destroy guys is on it. You might recognize him. Mm-hmm. Possible that they would recognize Rachel Koster, too, from Boy Room. That's, like, very big on TikTok.
I love Boy Room. Oh.
So that's possible. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, check it out. Might not be for everyone, but I think that there's a good shot that, like, even if you're not, like, I'm not the kind of person who watches, like, traditional comedy stand-up-y things on Netflix or anything like that, but I love watching this show because it's not stand-up. It's, like, pretty formatted comedy, and I think it's a great format. I won't go into too much detail because we've obviously done the last episode of The Layover that is promoting it directly, but I think it's worth a shot, and we will continue to have familiar faces from the jet lag universe throughout the season.
It's true. I'll say it's rated R. I'll say that. A lot of cursing. It's not for your kid who likes jet lag, unless your kid likes rated R stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, we love every once in a while we get like a very wholesome picture on social media that is like family TV night, Wednesday night, yeah. We're watching jet lag with like our nine-year-old. Your nine-year-old should not watch Abolish Everything.
This one is not for the tots. Not for the tots.
It's not like gross. Like I wouldn't say that it's like, it's not like egregious or anything. It's mainly just there's a lot of cursing.
Yeah. Cursing and adult themes at times.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's comedy.
Yeah. I think we're done.
Okay, great.
I think we're done. I agree.
I'm looking forward to the second that we're done, we can start season 13 itself. That's how it works, because we only exist through content.
Yay.
This is awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, very fun season. I think one of our more travel-y seasons in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, if that makes any sense. We visit a lot of places, see a lot of things, get a lot of variety. We know that there's an audience that particularly likes that sort of thing. So we definitely wanted to really have a season that is like more travel show than the average season while still having, you know, very good gameplay and all that. So
I say big season for challenges. Challenge is very important. A lot of, sort of yes, big challenges.
Big challenge season.
Yeah.
And a lot of fun challenges. So yeah, very excited for you to start watching it. Shout out to the post-production team for a very short off season.
Yeah, we're moving. Look at that.
Compared to sometimes they were able to really move fast on it. So we're already so back. But we will see you next week.
Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.